You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, my guest is Chantal Coetzer, who is an artist, a feminist historian, speaker, also radio presenter. You'll know her name from Fine Music Radio. She's based in Cape Town with a degree in fine arts from Wits University. And since graduating, she's explored installation art in Amsterdam, curated two galleries in Cape Town, and participated in numerous exhibitions, both locally and abroad. And wearing the dual hats of artist and curator, she has mentored many emerging artists with both their creative work as well as the exhibition process. And Coetzer's current series of artworks, African Queens Restoring History, is, I believe, her passion project. Chantal, welcome to the other side of the microphone, because you're a newsreader, aren't you, with us?
Yes, thank you, Rodney. It's quite a treat to be on the other end of the mic for a change.
Well, I've got so much to ask you, and I've got books here and pictures of all these things. But I think I'm just going to start chronologically. I just would like to know, have you always been an artist? Have you been an artist since you were a young person?
I think I was one of the lucky ones.
Oh, yes.
I was somebody who just never stopped to think that there was anything else I wanted to do.
Even when you were very, very young?
Even when I was really little. It's always been my thing.
Okay.
Yeah, which I realized when my daughter had to decide what she's going to study. You know, her interests and her talents are so broad that it was a really difficult challenge. For me, it was just the next thing. Of course.
And that's what you studied at Wits University.
Absolutely.
Fine art.
Yeah. So and I think that's quite a blessing, really.
It sounds like it, yes, because then you didn't have to make a decision, as you say, like your daughter.
No.
I just want to also ask you about your passion project, because this is clearly very important to you. African Queens Restoring History. Now, when did this start in your head? When did this idea of doing the African Queens begin?
Okay, so as many people encountered, COVID was a kind of a line in the sand for many of us.
Very much so,
up until then, I'd been part business owner of Third Eye Gallery in town, together with Sharon Piers, who's a remarkably talented photographer. And we ran the gallery and a picture framing business, and at the same time had studios that we'd built upstairs and never got to.
In the same venue,
a beautiful old building in Devoticant. And post-COVID, that was really my opportunity to, okay, I'm going to follow my dream of being a full-time artist. And the subject of African Queens came about because it's like when you read a novel, when you're writing a novel, you want to speak about something that is close to your heart. So I thought, well, I'm a woman. Women's issues are close to my heart. I'm also a very kind of keen amateur historian. And women's issues are so, so important to me. And I set about thinking, well, wouldn't it be interesting, because I love portraiture, to find some really tangible historical figures. And at that time, the world was also very focused on Queen Elizabeth and, you know, her whole life story. And I thought, but we're in Africa. We surely have our own queens. And I set about to research, and I literally expected maybe I'm going to find about five. And to my incredible astonishment, I came across, well, as we are today, I have found more than 30. And I'm talking about actual historical
real, in other words, real people.
Queens who have ruled, led armies, you know, fought against colonialism, against the trade slave, women who've done incredible things, expanding territories. And I was like, this is amazing. So if I don't know them, you know, and I kind of consider myself pretty well read,
yeah,
then I'm pretty sure most people haven't heard of them. You know, we've all heard of maybe Cleopatra. And of course, we've heard of our own Queen Nandi. But for the rest, it was like uncovering treasures.
I've only heard of the Queen Mchachi.
Oh, yeah, the Rain Queen.
The Rain Queen. That's the only queen I've heard of in Africa.
Yeah.
But presumably you came across her as well.
Yes, I actually tried to get an introduction, but it's very difficult.
Who is it?
It's extraordinarily difficult to get an introduction. However, this whole process has been... It really feels like almost a kind of divine thread that's been pulling me along.
Like a calling almost.
Very much so. So I did the research. So far I've done, you know, one solo exhibition of these queens, but this is an ongoing project. You know, my goal is to do at least 30 of these portraits and then put together a lovely book with the comprehensive histories. And there's so much extra information that one can put in and visual, you know, the kind of achievements that these women have left behind. And there's lovely old etchings. I mean, it could make for a beautiful book. But through having this exhibition, so I had a solo exhibition at Third Eye Gallery. And it then I was invited to take the show to Johannesburg. And on that aeroplane, I met Princess Teboho of the Tswana.
By sheer coincidence.
We were two people who hate standing in the queue at the gate and made eye contact. And I was like, idiots. And she's like, absolutely. Turns out she's the marketing manager for Converse. And she invited me to be a keynote speaker on Women's Day at the Converse, which is the sneaker brand, at their big Women's Day event.
Oh, gosh.
So when I got to Johannesburg, turns out the gallery manager is Masashaba Moloi, Princess Masashaba Moloi, who then introduced me to her mother, Queen Moloi of the Basutu. And fast forward to today, I'm working with the two of them, doing research, and she's then introducing me because, you know, as a commoner, one doesn't just make a phone call and request an audience with the Queen.
Absolutely believe that.
The protocol is extensive, and there are handlers that would negotiate the meeting and how it all happens. But via Masashaba, kind of managed to short-circuit the whole process. And Queen Moloi is passionate about the project. And so she is my key person in terms of vetting how I approach. In fact, she is doing the approaches to me, for me, sorry.
What an amazing stroke of luck, Chantal, on that aeroplane to be. I mean, and then being introduced to the Queen herself.
Yes.
And that the Queen is willing to help you.
Yes, I've done interviews with Queen Moloi. And that whole history of the Basutu is also a lovely one that a lot of us, and myself included, really don't know about.
We're going to come back to that in a moment. But what is your first choice of music? O Mio Babbino Caro.
I know. Isn't it? My goodness. O Mio Babbino Caro. Every time I hear it played, I find myself sobbing. So I'm warning you right now.
Yeah.
And it was my sister who many years ago pointed out to me, we were talking about this beautiful piece of music, and she loves it too, and she said, but don't you remember Omar Gracie, our beloved diminutive Jewish grandma? She used to play this every Sunday when we went to visit. This was her favorite. And I particularly love Montserrat Caballé. I mean, her voice, to me, she's perfection.
She is.
As far as this particular one goes. And so I thought, well, you did ask me to choose music that has a real personal resonance. And I can't think of a better one.
Well, let's have a listen also to this beautiful voice.
Thank you.
Montserrat Caballé there, who's able to float her beautiful voice so easily. O mio babbino caro from Gianni Schicchi by Puccini. And the first choice of my guest, the artist Chantal Coutsier, who's with me on People of Note this week. And as I said, the passion is African queens restoring history. And just before we went to the music, Chantal, you said something you said about Basutoland and the history thereof that we don't know about. And that's what you're researching at the moment as well to help you with this series.
Yes, that's right. So Queen Maloy, we don't hear very much about South African queens.
You know,
we hear about the odd king. And it's generally bad press, you know, when something's gone quite awry.
Mm-hmm.
But the royalty in South Africa, they take their community work incredibly seriously, and they do an amazing amount in their communities. And the history of the Basutu is known very well by, obviously, the Basutu. But for the rest of us, you know, we've heard quite a bit about Zulu history, and we know a little bit about the Xhosa history, and the Basutu history. I'm still in the process of, but it's fascinating, and it speaks very much about origins higher up in Africa, and why people moved south, and how they regrouped, and that group identity and its importance.
And all this is acknowledged, it's written down, it's all written down.
Some of it is written down, and some of it is oral. So I feel it's almost the obvious next step, because thus far I've been dealing with queens from our past, the most recent one being Ya Asantewaa from the Ashanti Gold Coast. She died in 1921. Nobody more recent than that.
I was going to ask you that. Are these queens still alive, or they dead?
Yes.
The ones that you have
yes.
painted?
Yes.
Okay. But there are presumably still many queens around today that you still to get to.
Yes. But I thought to start on home ground.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean queens here in Africa,
yes.
South
yes.
Africa, that you can get your hands
yes.
onto and explore.
So a little bit more about that beautiful synchronicity. So I was up in Joburg for the month of Women's Month, August last year, which was the month of my exhibition there. And then having met Queen Maloy, I was invited to go with her to a conference of royalty attended only by queens and princesses at UNISA. And there I got to meet Queen Maria of the, where is she? She's a Tswana queen. Who came in her beautiful regalia. And she's on in years. She's well in her 80s. So I was granted the audience with her and was permitted to take photographs.
Oh.
I mean, again, just really finding myself in the right place at the right
time. Yes. And I'm sure not many people would be allowed to take photographs of this
no.
royalty, but because of your connection, that obviously helped.
I was very fortunate.
The serendipity you talk about.
So beautiful.
When you do meet these people, we spoke about the royalty. Does it really feel, you know, we think of royalty as the Queen of England and Buckingham Palace and that sort of thing. Is there a similar sort of regal respect and all that between them and the people?
There is. I would say very much so in terms of those who know. But also far more low-key than mm-hmm. anything we've seen in Europe.
I'm sure.
You know, there's none of the grandeur and the pomp and the ceremony. No bowing is expected.
Okay.
Although there's such... Queen Maloy in particular has such dignity, and she has such grace that one almost wants to... You kind of feel obliged to genuflect.
Really? What about the husbands, Chantal? Are there husbands of these queens?
Interestingly, there are, but they play a lesser role than what I've seen. So I can't speak generally. Obviously, Queen Maloy's husband is also a king, although they are divorced.
Oh, interesting.
So he I haven't met him, and thus far... I'm so queen-centered that I doubt I will.
Yes, because one of the reasons, isn't it, driving you is this feminist side of you as well.
Yes.
And the need to bring these people into our consciousness.
Very much so.
And so let's leave the kings alone and concentrate on the queens.
They've got enough press.
I'd like to ask you, I want to start talking about how you paint them, because just looking at this book that you've brought here, and I know this is not television, I'm looking at a picture of Queen Amina of Zazao, and I'm wondering here's Queen Amina of Zaza. What is, she looks quite fierce, by the way. What do you use? Do you use canvas? Do you carve it, paint? How do you do it? Because they're very vivid.
Yes, thank you. They are. So I use two mediums. Some of them are these interesting kind of Coptic cross shapes, and others are circular. The circular ones are canvas, but these Coptic cross shapes are hardboard that I've gold leafed. And so what I do with each portrait, having done the research, I try and include as many clues as to the identity of the sitter as possible. So in this case, Queen Amina was a Hausa queen, and that's an area in modern-day Nigeria, far north. And the motif that is painted, that actual shape that the painting has taken, is the shape of the Hausa knot. And it is the symbol, which has been stylized today as the symbol of the Hausa people. And it's also embroidered on their clothing, and it's included in their architecture as these beautiful motifs on the architecture. So anybody who knows the Hausa people or has any idea about it's modern-day Nigeria, will immediately recognize where she's from.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And the colors presumably add to that, the red hat that she's wearing and green.
Yes,
red,
and the green is a symbol of royalty. That particular clothing that she's wearing is only worn by royalty.
Okay. Yeah. And what about the praying mantis on her shoulder?
Oh, that's an interesting
one. That's intrigued me now. And in fact, I've just seen it, although it's as clear as day.
So I often have to gloss over this when I speak to school children, because of course they want to know much more. And I have to ask what the PG rating is. So we all know about the praying mantis, and after they've mated, the female praying mantis will bite the head of the male.
That's right.
And eat.
Rather barbaric.
Rather barbaric. So that's a reference. So Queen Amina was a very feisty queen who, when she was queen, when she became queen, she was already the head of the military. And prior to her reign, it was a peaceful nation, but she was not a peaceful person. Her intention was to expand the territory throughout sub-Saharan Africa, and she set up trade routes. And in so doing, she had to conquer many neighboring kingdoms. So having fought the battle, she would pick a leader from the enemy's ranks and bring him into her tent for the night.
Into her web.
And the very next day, the poor man would be beheaded.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely, lest anybody find out what had occurred in the night with the queen.
That's quite a story.
It is quite.
I'll look at praying mantises in a new light. Just quickly, before we do our next music break, the features of this Queen Amina, as I said earlier, quite fierce, quite masculine, actually.
Yes.
Where did you get an image of her to paint?
So I actually did research into Hausa people.
Okay.
And I found a beautiful image. It's obviously preferable. Wherever possible, I would find a model to model for me, and I'd do a photo shoot. But in this instance, I'd come across my Queen Amina muse and use that. But also, she was known as Queen Amina, a woman as capable as a man.
Ah, okay. That's beginning to make sense.
And I have a friend, Maxwell Atwi, who is a Nigerian painter and asked him to pose holding an umbrella.
Oh, I see.
So that I could have the hands.
Yes.
And that's, so I literally used a man's hand.
Yeah, and it does look masculine.
To accentuate that part of her character.
Well, I never. Now, look here, Chantal, what's your next piece of music?
My next piece of music is so not what you'd expect on fine music radio.
Oh, dear. Yes.
So the reason I chose this if you're driving, you're going to have to stop so that you can get out and dance. It's a song by Mango Groove, and it's the very first song that they recorded, and it's called Dance Some More. And the reason I chose this is that we were all at university together. I studied at Fitz University, and when Claire joined the band, she was in matric, and the following year joined us at university, and she was dating a friend of mine, Kevin Buerta, who was best friends with John Layden.
Oh.
So we would hang out at all the clubs wherever they were performing, dodging the police, because of course it was a multiracial band. There was a lot of tension around that. And at that time, big voice Jack Lerole was still alive. And I loved his voice. And particularly on this song, you can really, really hear that beautiful, booming voice. And so it's always been one of my favorites. And it was written actually by Kevin and John, but also Jack, Big Voice. He also co-wrote it, and George Lewis and Simon Machlatini and Kabinda. And then the Mahotela Queens were the backup singers on this one.
Good grief.
So what a beautiful combination.
Yes.
So I thought, well, seeing as going down memory lane, and yeah, so this one really brings back that whole kind of era of my life. And yeah, it's a feel-good one.
Don't sleep, man. What's the matter with you?
Dance some more.
Get clever when it's
Mango Groove there on Fine Music Radio. Dance Some More, apparently the first song they recorded, and the second choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Chantal Coetzee, an artist, feminist historian, speaker, radio presenter, and her current passion is African queens restoring history. I just looking through this book while that music was playing, I came across Queen Bessie, who is so different from Anina, because she certainly looks feminine, even though she's holding a large pipe and puffing away, and goodness knows what's in this bottle. But tell me about her. I mean, because she looks so different, she must be a very different kettle of fish, for want of a better word.
Entirely. So I'm glad you actually picked up on that. So Queen Bessie was a young English lass of 7 years old when the ship that she was on was shipwrecked near Lambasi Bay back in 1736. And so the bottle that she's holding actually has a little ship in a bottle.
Oh, yes.
But it's, you know, the actual paintings are rather large. They're about 1.3 meters large in diameter. Mm-hmm. So quite difficult to see in a reproduction in the catalogue. But she was one of only three survivors that washed up on the shore. And the Amapondo took them in. And it's not known what really happened to the other two. There's varying reports, but we have a lot of information. And a wonderful South African author, Hazel Crampton, wrote a book called The Sunburnt Queen, based on her research, which is extensive. And she found so much information about Queen Bessie. There've been missionaries that came across the Amapondo and actually came across and had interviews with her grandson and her granddaughter. There have been ivory hunters from the Cape who describe how they came over a ridge and then they saw this herd of pure white Nguni cattle. And the backstory to that was that the chief decided that she was good fortune to the tribe. And if anybody was blessed with a pure white Nguni calf, they were to donate it to her to build her lobola. And it became quite a lovely gesture, and you knew you would be blessed with good luck.
Yes.
And
yes.
The irony about this whole story is that she really was good luck to the people, in that she married the chief, Chief Sango. They had blue-eyed children, which was very unusual.
I'm
and
sure,
even today,
yes.
The Abolungu have blue eyes,
wow.
Many of them.
Okay.
And soon after her death, so she was queen for 60 years, and it was a time of peace. But soon after her death, Shaka's MPs started pushing the Amapondo down south, and of course there was pressure from the Cape, putting pressure on the people from the south. So her lifetime was blessed with a period of peace. And the ivory hunters that found this beautiful white woman living in this kraal with her huts and her cattle were saying, no, but come to the Cape with us, you know, come back to your people. And she was astonished. She said, but these are my people.
Yes. Well, so she was, in fact, white.
Yes.
She was a white woman.
Yes.
That was shipwrecked and then
yes.
taken in by the Amapondo.
Completely.
And made their queen and became completely traditional, Amapondo traditional.
And that, I mean, you can imagine. At the age of seven,
yes.
How much would she have remembered? She remembered that her name was Bessie, and she had a few little trinkets that were salvaged from the shipwreck, and apparently loved ornamentation. So she was known to be covered with strings of cowrie shells and beads and grass bracelets. And so I've brought those all in.
I see that, yes, including a pipe, as I said,
absolutely.
That she smoked.
Absolutely.
What a lovely contrast, really, from the one that we've just had.
So completely
Anina,
different.
Anina, was it? Anina.
Yeah.
I'm going to suggest we take another piece of music. And this, now we go back to the opera. Eben Nanandro Lontana, this famous song from the opera La Valle by Alfredo Catalani. Tell me about this and the singer you've chosen.
So, back in the 80s. I saw that beautiful French film, Diva.
Yes, Diva, yes, which introduced this aria to hundreds of thousands of people.
Absolutely. I hadn't heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And although, of course, Maria Callas and so many others have sung it beautifully, Wilhelmina Fernandez was the actress in the film.
That's right.
That actually
sang it.
Sang
yes.
It.
Not dubbed or anything.
Not
she sang
dubbed.
It.
She actually sang it. And I thought how pertinent, because she died last month.
Oh, my goodness.
At the age of 75.
Oh.
So I thought,
The
same actress. I thought, well, let's see if we can't find her version. I don't know if you've managed to find her version
of it.
We'll
try and get hold of the soundtrack.
But what a beautiful piece of opera. Yeah. And I think we might well be crying again, right?
Okay. Let's hope for the best. I'm so glad you chose that, Chantal. The actual woman who acted in the film Diva, Wilhelmina Fernandez, singing what she sang in the opera by Alfredo Catalani, the opera La Valle, E ben non andro lontana, and a beautiful aria. And it was another choice, as I say, of my guest on People of Note this week, the artist Chantal Coetzee. We've been talking a lot about your passion, as you say, the queens, the African queens, recording history and restoring history. But the other part of you is a feminist historian. Just explain what that entails and where that comes from.
So the reason I coin it that way is that the research that I'm doing is not the research that is mainstream, or should I say has been mainstream. As we know, history is written by the victors. So it's most of what we know as African history, it was written by white, you know, patriarchal historians,
yes,
often with a colonial mindset.
Very much so.
So I'm finding that these women might be known and are known in their own countries. Interestingly enough, not even so much in Benin, but we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
But aren't known as Queen Elizabeth might be, or even a lesser, let's even say, you know, lesser known, you can think of any
European
of the European
queens, yes,
royalty.
Yes, yes.
And to me, that's just an injustice, because particularly African women are stereotypically portrayed as voiceless, submissive, oppressed, and voiceless. And the reality is not that. And for me, it's so empowering to speak particularly to young people so that they understand that what they might be perceiving as the status quo is an imposed one, and it's not reality. There is no glass ceiling. So,
okay.
Yeah, very important,
so
I find.
So these queens, were they, did they have a voice, and they were not put down or oppressed by their own people, I mean, not by white people?
Interestingly, many of the queens that I've researched were super aggressive, and I understand why. For example, Queen Ranavalona of Madagascar, when her husband died, she very quickly organized that the entire rest of the royal family be executed.
Oh, my goodness.
And took the throne, so that by the time his closest advisors knew that he died, she'd already claimed power. And she was a good example, but I mean, she was ultra fierce and has been vilified by the West. However, if you consider that for 30 years, she prevented the French and the English from colonizing Madagascar.
Now, that is interesting.
Now, how do we not know about her?
Yes, why didn't we know about her?
For
exactly.
30 years, that is no mean achievement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so within Madagascar, although her methods were fierce, she is honored because she behaved in a traditional manner and she protected her people.
A lovely story about her that we didn't know about, did we?
You know.
And you didn't, presumably, before you started researching.
Not until I started scratching.
Tell me the Benin story, which seems to feature when you went to Benin. Why did you go to Benin, first of all?
Right. So this is another beautiful synchronistic little thread that's been happening. So with my solo exhibition, one of my friends, who's very politically strong and does a lot of good work politically in South Africa, Martha Muller, she made a Facebook post about the exhibition. And the South African ambassador to Benin and Togo, Ambassador Rubina Marks, saw the post and contacted me and said, Freedom Day is coming up in Benin. I want your artwork to be represented together with Nandipa Mtambo and also one of the Beninois artists, because I want it to be a Women's Day event. And I was like, absolutely.
Of course, I'm sure.
So at that time, that was last year. So at the time, unfortunately, we didn't have the funding to get me over there, but we did manage to get the work, and not the actual big paintings, but what we did is I gave them permission to take the high-resolution images and make what's called a diasec. A diasec is an amazing product. It's a replication of the work, but it's done, printed onto an aluminium backing with a perspex front. So they could be cut out to those unusual shapes that my paintings are.
Wow, okay.
And they now hang in the South African Embassy in Cotonou in Benin. So ever since then, her and I have been cooking up, how are we going to get me to Benin? And so our project has been to set up a cultural exchange between Benin and South Africa. Because my goal is, sure, I'd love to travel and spread the news, but I also want to empower women artists. The opportunities are not as plentiful as I'd like them to be.
Or as we might think they are.
Exactly. And so we invited a lovely 30-year-old Beninoise woman, Setonu Jedetin, to come to Cape Town, and I gave her a bit of a tour of galleries. When I left for Benin, she was given an interpreter because she only speaks French. And it was an incredible experience for her. So when I was in Benin, I got to visit her studio.
That must have been very interesting for you.
It really, really was, because their country is so very poor, with such incredibly talented artists. I got to meet several artists that have actually managed to really make a statement of Beninoise art and have traveled to other countries, and they're doing amazing work because they are all plowing that passion back into the country and mentoring other young artists. So that's the global goal of the project. So me going was my first foray to have a look at what are the possibilities, and I stayed at an international residence there. It's called CCRI, and what that stands for, I'm going to have to read it because I always forget how to say it in English. I'm going to say it in French because I don't know how to say it in English. It's okay. A Centre Culturel de Rencontre Internationale. And then the name John Smith. He was a Beninoise activist who was buried in Ouidah. So I found there this little in this very poor country a cultural residency situation, mm-hmm. where they're promoting film, drama, art, artists, exhibitions, yeah. Musicians, and doing wonderful work.
Look, okay, there are a couple more questions I want to ask you before the clock stops us, Chantal.
Yes.
But your next piece of music, tell me about The Woman Without Hatred.
So this piece of music by Ishmael Lo, who's a Senegalese musician, which is also West Africa, mm-hmm. It's almost become the soundtrack of my life for the last few years. I love it. The name La Femme Sans Haine, the woman without hatred, is also known as Toutes les femmes sont terrines, which is a refrain that he keeps singing, which means all women are queens.
Okay, I see.
And so it was one of the songs on a soundtrack that I play when I'm working and always is played at my exhibitions. And I thought, yeah, I've got to share with you what goes on in my head when I'm painting.
Musically. Okay, let's listen.
Toutes les femmes sont des reines, certaines plus reines que les reines. Elles disent des choses qui surprennent, elles brisent les hommes qu'elles enchaînent. Cette chanson pour cette reine qui dit à son roi, maintenant, je m'en vais avec le vent. Avec les barbares d'Occident, ce que tu n'as pas défendu par les armes, ne crois pas le garder avec tes larmes. Je m'en vais où ton peuple va. Je m'en vais me chercher un autre roi. Toutes les femmes sont des reines, sur terre, sur mer, neige ou désert. Derrière le voile des formes pleines, il y a le mystère des sirènes. Brûler les villes, brûler les bouches. La flamme lèche et le fer touche. La chair vivante parle par la bouche. la chair morte peint par l'amour. Ce que tu n'as pas défendu par les armes. Ne crois pas le garder avec des larmes. Je m'en vais où ton peuple va. Je m'en vais me chercher un autre roi. Toutes les femmes sont des reines. Dis-le à celle qui t'aime. Ne pas vouloir devenir roi, ne songe rien, c'est comme ça. Voilà ce qu'a dit une reine à un roi bon, vaincu sans haine. Elle est partie comme s'en va la mer quand la lune veut ça. Ce que tu n'as pas défendu par les armes. Ne crois pas le garder avec tes larmes. Je m'en vais où ton peuple va. Je m'en vais me chercher un autre roi. Je m'en vais. Je m'en vais.
Well, now that's called The Woman Without Hatred, also All Women Are Queens. And another choice of my guest, Chantal Coetzee, on People of Note this week. And as always, time races by. But I wanted to talk about your being nominated for the Women of Stature Awards in the category of Women in Arts and Culture. And apparently on the 13th of April, you're a finalist, aren't you?
Yes.
And on the 13th of April, they'll say who's won. But tell me about this award and how it came about.
So it's actually one of those situations where it truly isn't so much about winning as taking part. The organization behind the awards is the Women of Stature Foundation, and they do incredible work in terms of uplifting women.
Are they international?
They have recently become international.
Okay.
And
okay.
It's expanding, but it started here in South Africa.
Oh, okay.
And it's been going since 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And they are an organization which have, they've got so many programs. So one of the programs that they have is called Women Rise. So the Women of Stature Awards is really part of promoting the financial independence and the well-being of women in business.
Okay.
Okay. So it's funded by initiatives such as the Women of Stature Awards. Okay.
Okay.
And the aim of it is to create opportunities for women to network, to so for example, they've given us three incredibly valuable seminars. We've had mentorship programs. So it's not just about the winning.
The actual award, yes, it's a whole process.
It's a process of upskilling mm-hmm. women. And then with the idea being that those women, the ones and winners in categories, and there's 12 categories. The women in arts and culture is just one of many. There's women in coaching and arts and culture, but also education and training, engineering and mining. I mean, there's many.
Okay.
And the idea is to upskill women to then be able to pass on the baton.
Absolutely. Brilliant idea. Now, look, we have to end, and before we play your last piece of music, Chantal, how do people contact? I mean, I've been lucky because you've shown me this brochure, this book. How do people contact you? And also, if they want to see some of your paintings of the African queens?
Ah, well, I'd love that. And they can reach me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm on both. On Instagram, it's chantal.kutsia.fine.art.
Okay.
And on Facebook, chantal.kutsia. And I've tried pretty hard to give little bits of information about everything that I'm doing. But obviously, people can also direct message me, and I'm very open to chatting or taking part in.
And your website? Do you have a website?
Not at the
so
moment.
So the best place is Facebook and Instagram.
Yes.
It's the best way to contact
yes,
you.
Yes, I find that.
Now, tell me about the last piece of music, One Man. Gosh, we have a man coming up here.
Well, this piece of music, it's almost like, where do I start? So it's by Luke Davidson, who is my stepson.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yes. And it features Oshri, who is an incredibly talented Israeli musician. And the two together have brought this music that's composed by Luke. And they have created something that I believe is truly wonderful. But what I really love about it is that One Man is, it's got a deep spiritual meaning to Luke. It's his spiritual questing. And that he's put into a piece of music. And I just think he's fabulously talented.
Good. Well, that's what we're going to end with. And Chantal, thank you very much for sharing all this with us and opening up the African Queens, Restoring History. And I'm looking forward to your next door exhibition. So do let us know when that's going to happen as well.
Thank you so much, Rodney. It's been a pleasure.
My guest, Chantal Kutsia. Thanks.
One man might have stood up tall. One man might have taken a fall. One man might have loved your name. One man might have played your game. Oh, oh. One man might have sat by the king. One man might have nothing to bring. One man might have praised the Lord, and one man might have died by the sword. Oh, in a dreamer's dream, would you follow me? In a blind man's world. Oh, in a dreamer's dream, would you follow me? Blind man's world. One man might have hated you. One man might enjoy the view. One man lights his own candle. One man walking in sandals.
Dreamer's dream, would you? you follow me? In a blind man's world. Oh, in a dreamer's dream. Would you follow me? In a blind man's world.